You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Tony Seidel. Tony, it's good to have you here this morning.
Good to be here.
So, Tony, the way the show begins is with a big question. Who are you? What do we need to know about what you aspire to live, what, some of your experiences, the labels you've worn to start this conversation?
God, sometimes I don't even know if I know who I am.
And you're not the first person to say that, and they, people have many different ways of making that same comment.
Yeah. I'm from here in town. I went to Fall Creek and Boynton and Ithaca High, and, well, ACS. I currently am trying to find a career as a writer, doing plays, and I'm working on a screenplay and a few manuscripts of stories of the insane things I've gone through in my life. I was a musician for a long time. I still play, but I haven't played out in a while. I was a valet for a few years down in Texas. Played sports when I was young.
Yeah. You just kind of tried a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I have. That's what life's all about, right?
To a point, yeah. And then, no, I'm actually, I'm curious and open, and sometimes curiosity is absolutely enlivening and enlightening, and sometimes it's dangerous.
Yes. Yeah, my curiosity has got me into many horrible situations.
So let's go to your music. What did you want to start with today? What did you want to play first of the songs you brought?
Let's see. We'll start it slow and mellow. How about Moonlight Mile?
Okay. And do you want to say anything about that?
Sure. This is off the Rolling Stones' Sticky Fingers album. And in my opinion, this is the greatest album ever recorded. A shout out to my friend Sean. He has written probably every single song because of the riffs on this album.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, here we go.
Thank you.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Tony Seidel. So, Tony, the question I'd like to go to is, what have you had to learn in order to be able to live the life that you value now? What are some of the things you had to go through to put life in perspective and to gain the skills that you need to live the life you live now?
Well, I mean, I lived street life for a long time, so I had to learn how to read people really quick and be in tune with their vibrations and whatnot to know whether I was in a good situation or a bad one.
Right.
And that's a skill I still use now, and it's a lot sharper now that I've been, I'm clean and been off of drugs for 7.5 years or so. Writing is a pretty good skill that teaching, helps me communicate with people. I'm learning right now how my words, whether I mean them to mean something or not, affect other people, how my words and actions affect other people, and the butterfly effect of that. Cause I've said things that were horribly offensive that I didn't even realize were, a big deal.
Right.
And gotten myself into trouble in the
new being people. Clueless as to why.
Well, it's clueless as to me being, that I was even being offensive.
Right. And I have a similar track record.
Wait, because I got out of prison about 2 years ago, and I came across the Civic Ensemble, the people that I'm doing we're doing the play with.
Sure.
And met a whole different kind of people, and the people that I've met through that I love very much. They're awesome. But I tend to step on people's toes sometimes without even realizing it.
And did Civic Ensemble help you to understand that, or how did they help you come to awareness of that?
Oh, they like hit me over the head with a baseball bat, basically. You cannot be like that. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Got in my face. You can't talk like that. You can't be like that. You have to realize what you're doing,
Right.
And I mean, like, I did something last week that really hurt somebody. Made me cry because I felt so awful for hurting their feelings.
Right. What has had to kind of be removed or open up in you so that you could hear this feedback? Why didn't you hear it years ago, or was it a problem years ago?
Because I didn't care. You didn't years care. Ago. Yeah. Okay. I didn't care what other people thought. And I was so annihilated on drugs that I didn't even notice to care. And I think having so much respect and love for the people that I've met that makes me strive to be a better person, and I got a lot of karmic debt. So
you got a lot of good things to do back.
Yes.
So how did you discover that you could care without losing yourself?
Well, I always cared. That's why I was annihilating everything.
Right.
I cared too much.
You cared too much. But that's what I would have guessed. But how did you begin to figure out that, oh, this caring thing, it doesn't have to do me in. I don't have to do anybody else in. But somehow we can both exist.
Oh, I'm still working on that.
Yeah, but the thing is you're working on it, but it sounds like you weren't working on it. You were just trying to numb.
Right, yeah, yourself. Absolutely.
So when did you decide it was better to try to work on it than to try to just numb it?
I did a 5-year prison sentence, and first 2 years I was planning on coming right back out and going right back to selling drugs and doing what I did, and I just started changing, I don't know how. I don't know. I got really lucky. But like, I was watching these younger guys that were in jail, and they weren't drug addicts. They just had serious behavioral issues. They were very violent kids, and they would erupt with all this rage, and they were like the children of drug addicts.
Right.
And they were a little older than my kids, and I was like, realized that they were like that because their parents weren't around. Their parents, you know, they didn't, because like a lot of it seemed like attention seeking stuff,
right,
you know?
Right, right. They would lose control in the moment because they didn't have a container to live in.
Right, right, right. So it seemed like just like everything they did was about getting attention. Even right. these tantrums and even like when they made some food, like everything they did, they were causing attention to themselves. And I just started thinking that I needed to change myself so that I could go home. See, I went to prison because I had a bunch of drugs in the car, and I had my kid in the car, and I gave me the kid the backpack to get rid of the drugs, and completely violated not only my own code of not having my kids and drugs in the car at the same time, but the sacred bond between me and my son.
Right.
And I had to make that right. And the only, and I never will, but like I had to, I couldn't come home and just go back to what I was doing, because that would completely tell him that he didn't matter, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I had to figure out how to change.
So beginning in that car stop.
That was the beginning.
That was the beginning of the lesson.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And the violation of your relationship with your son was the key.
Yeah. 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 So, like I started, I actually started reading some books on addiction, and I started figuring out some things about myself. And I didn't really realize that I had changed at all. And I came home to nothing, because a 5-year prison sentence is a hard relationship to hold on to with another person.
Yep.
And we both changed differently at the same time, not together. So we were different people, and we went our separate ways. So I came home to nothing, and was in a homeless shelter and lost. You know, I started, I had cut ties with all the people that I had associated with before I went to jail, except for a few. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know how to do anything. Well, I knew how to do things, but I didn't know how to be.
Right.
And
be comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah. I'm like, coming home from prison to the streets, like in prison, people stop. Like, if you're sitting at a table, someone will come up to you and stay. They'll stop like 3 feet from you before they come any closer, and so until you acknowledge them, so that they know, so that you know they're there. You know,
there's a ritual for acknowledging presence,
and like, and people don't reach across each other. You know, and here in the civilized world, you'll be making a cup of coffee at a thing, and someone will reach right across your coffee and grab the sugar, and they're not thinking nothing of it, and they're not doing nothing wrong.
Right,
but that I had to get used to that again.
Right, right.
And even being in a room full of people, you know, I didn't feel comfortable. I put my back to the wall and watch everybody. Right. You know, and
hyper vigilant.
Yeah, and so I started going to I remember I didn't leave my room for 2 days at the homeless shelter. I just sat there with my head in my hands, and one of the guys there was going to an AA meeting, so I went. And I saw some people from my past that were clean, and so I started hanging out with them a little bit. And then I ran into somebody who was still in active addiction, but he told me about the Civic Ensemble because he knows that I write. And he was like, I think you would dig this. And when I got in with them, like they encouraged my insanities. Like,
okay.
And they
tell me what you mean by that.
Like they taught me a place to where I could get out all that like craziness that's like an acceptable spot for my craziness.
Right. And you're, you know, and what, so and what chaos. What is the craziness? What is the chaos? What is the insanity that you need to get out? And is it through writing that you get it out, or acting?
It's through writing. I much prefer the writing to the acting, but I'm starting to like acting a little bit.
Okay. So what is it that you get out? What is it that you need to get out?
Just that energy that like, cause I like have a heart of chaos, you know, it's just like the Tasmanian devil's inside of me.
So sometimes. What are the stories that embody that chaos?
Oh, geez. Stories of...
Tell me, or talk me through what it looks like.
Just, I don't even know what to say. I just have this energy in me that needs to get out, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm really like... Like I said, I'm really sensitive to other people's vibrations, and I didn't know how to deal with it before, mm-hmm. and that's one of the reasons I used drugs was to numb that. And now that I'm better, prison helped with that because the drugs weren't there, so right. I started, you know, and finding a happy medium for the.
They didn't necessarily teach you, but you could lead yourself into better practices.
Right. Yeah. You know, and I learned how to like shut it off without having to use drugs to shut it off.
Right. To set it aside.
But I just have a lot of kinetic energy inside of me, and it needs to get out. And probably because I shut it down for so long.
Well, or maybe you're just a person who needs to express yourself.
I do.
Physically, emotionally, intellectually.
I do.
And you do it in a whole host of ways through your music, I imagine, as well as through this writing and through theater. So you're getting ready to be in a show.
Yeah.
With Civic Ensemble.
Yep.
Now, are you helping with writing the script or?
Yeah. Tom Dunn and I. Sarah Chalmers is like the head of Civic Ensemble. I don't know if she's the head, but she's the
Civic Engage head of the Civic.
Yeah,
engagement.
There's several different facets.
Of the Civic
Ensemble. I joined Reentry Theater.
Right.
Most of the people that are in Reentry Theater are addicts and ex-cons, and not everybody, but most of them.
Right.
And. So we were at a standstill after the last play that we did, Nightmares and Dreamscapes, over at the Hangar Theater, and we had become stagnant. We only had four members, four to five members. The meetings would sometimes only be two people or three, and we were looking for a new way, and we had come to the conclusion that maybe we should try... Because going to day reporting, because I had been in day reporting, that's where I learned yoga was day reporting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
day reporting is for people who are on parole.
Right. Well, not parole. People that are on probation and parole.
Right. But this is a drug. Yeah.
Yeah. It's people that the people that are supervising people on some kind of legal thing.
Got it.
That they feel need a little more supervision and structure.
Right.
You know, like. Most of them are like just getting out of rehab or jail or on their way into rehab or jail.
Waiting for space to open up.
Yeah. And they do a lot of programs down there.
So I remember hearing about this. So taking your outreach into the day reporting.
Yeah, program. We went into day reporting and some of the things that Civics does like we do a beanbag toss. See the look on people's faces when we started throwing a beanbag around. Like, what is this? And there were similar experiences for me when I first joined. I'm like, what are these people doing?
They're not just reaching across you. They're after throwing something in your face.
So people started feeling a little comfortable, and then Sarah introduced. Scene writing and stuff, and people came up with a bunch of little scenes, and we probably had 10 or 15, plus Khalil Bey and I had been working on a new play, and we were kind of tossing around ideas, and there was an antagonist and a straight guy. Originally, I was the straight guy and Khalil was the antagonist.
Right.
Sorry to Khalil, but I flipped it.
Uh-huh.
And so we took the scenes that a bunch of several people had written.
Right there in the day program.
Yeah, in the day reporting. Some of them were a page, some of them two, some of them just an idea, you know?
Right.
And then Tom Dunn and I kind of laid down the skeleton. We shot ideas back and forth.
Sure.
And then I wrote some scenes and he wrote some scenes. And then Tom, made it flow a story.
Right. And this is how you build civic theater out of the lives of the people who do the production. You know, these are the stories of the lives we live here.
Yes.
And they are fictionalized just enough to not betray anybody's true privacy.
Right.
But they get at the core.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they work.
I put a lot of personal stuff in there and so did other people.
Yes.
You know, everything in there.
It has a truth.
Happened.
It's resonant with life.
Yeah. Everything in there happened.
Right.
You know, another member of Civic, Lucy and Brian and I, we had come up with this character, Narcan Man, who, you know,
the antidote.
Yeah. Like he's in the play. We at first made him he would take OD'd people and take selfies and run their pockets and stuff, but because we're doing a serious play, we couldn't do all of that.
We
toned him down, but yeah.
And sometimes it can veer into slapstick when you get into it, just for the heck of it. I mean,
right.
That's part of the letting the demons out.
Yeah, right. And so what we came up with, what Tom and I and the rest of the Civic people came up with is really moving. I really love watching the stage managers watch the scenes as we're practicing them, because some of them are just very... very emotional, and I love watching their faces while they're watching, because I see their emotions and I know that I had a hand in that, and that to me is just to watch these people perform my words is
right. And many times awesome. The stage managing and the support staff are coming from the colleges and their students who haven't had the life experience that you all are enacting in front of their eyes. So it may be the first time or something that they haven't seen in real face-to-face.
Well, one of the stage managers, Lauren, God bless her, she's so awesome. She should be a professional poker player because she does not change her face ever. She's good. She's good.
So, what is this year's production called?
It's called Streets Like This.
Streets Like This.
And there's three main characters, three main stories of different people struggling through different parts of the system. One guy is addicted to heroin, and he's trying to... Well, he's no longer addicted physically.
Right.
And he's trying to... navigate the waters of now he's on he had stolen money from his mother and to the point where her mortgage check bounced and she had him arrested, and so now he's navigating the drug court waters. And a second character, her name is Abby. She overdoses in a bathroom of a gas station, and CPS finds out about it. And when CPS shows up, they find drug paraphernalia
with kids,
and they take the kid. And now she's navigating those systems. And the third person, she's not a drug addict. Her name is Crystal, and she's a prostitute. And she got knocked up in high school, got pregnant in high school, and dropped out, and then had several kids after that, and was in a domestic violent relationship. And so she's all she was a, I mean, all she was a home giver,
right.
I mean, homemaker. So her partner goes to jail, and now she's left with the kids, no job experience, little education, a huge chip on her shoulder, and she has trouble like even like filling out the paperwork for DSS.
Yeah, without going ballistic.
Right. Yeah. And so it's meant to show like the struggle of how hard it is once you get into those systems to navigate them, to use them to your advantage, and to get out of them.
Right, right. So when the streets like these, when is this performance happening? What are the dates?
Oh, streets like this,
streets
not
like
these.
This, like this. Okay.
I made the same mistake. I thought it was these two.
Streets like this.
It's going to be at the Kitchen Theater on May 5th at 7 p.m. May 6th at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. And then May 7th at the GAC at 7:30. And that's a free show at the GAC.
At 7:30.
Yeah. And so, and I play, the character I play is named Dennis. Dennis is society, basically. He doesn't want to see the struggle. He doesn't want to see, doesn't want to change anything in his view. And Khalil Bey plays Dion, who narrates the entire story and tries to get Dennis to see.
Right.
And it's pretty cool.
It's a huge struggle.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, and you know it. Tony, why don't you pick our next song? I'll do the station ID and we'll listen to your next piece.
Okay.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen,
Ithaca. I think we'll rock out with some Johnny Cash this time.
Okie doke.
This is Cocaine Blues.
Early one morning while making the rounds, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down. I went right home and I went to bed. I stuck that 11.44 beneath my head. Got up next morning and I grabbed that gun, took a shot of cocaine and away I run. Made a good run, but I run too slow. They overtook me down in Juarez, Mexico. Laid in the hot joints, taking the pills. In walked the sheriff from Jericho Hill. He said, Willie Lee, your name is not Jack Brown. You're the dirty hack that shot your woman down. Said, yes, oh yes, my name is Willie Lee. If you've got a warrant, just to read it to me. Shut her down because she made me slow. I thought I was her daddy, but she had five more. When I was arrested, I was dressed in black. They put me on a train and they took me back. Had no friend for to go my bail. They slapped my dirty carcass in that county jail. Early next morning, about a half past nine, I spied a sheriff coming down the line. Up then he coughed as he cleared his throat. He said, come on, you dirty hack, into that district court. Into the courtroom my trial began, where I was handled by 12 honest men. Just before the jury started out, I saw that little judge come as to look about. In about 5 minutes in walked a man, holding the verdict in his right hand. The verdict read in the first degree. I hollered, Lordy, Lordy, have mercy on me. The judge, he smiled as he picked up his pen. 99 years in the Folsom pen. 99 years underneath that ground. I can't forget today I shut that bad bitch down. Come on, you gotta listen unto me. Lay off that whiskey and let that cocaine be.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Tony Seidel. Tony, what has surprised you in the last 8 years, 7.5 years that you've been clean and sober? What has surprised you that you did not really believe could happen for you?
Well,
good or bad?
one of the things that surprised me the most was just meeting people that genuinely cared about me and my well-being, and would basically do anything for me if they, you know, had the means and could.
Sure, they'd do whatever they could for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they genuinely care for me. And when they ask me how I am, they're not just saying it.
Right.
They really want to know how I am. And it took a little while to get used to that. Because I'm not saying that nobody ever cared about me, but it took, you know, being in the street life, it takes a long time to get to that level with somebody.
Right. And in the street life, when you're doing something that can get you in trouble at any moment, if something slips the wrong way, you never get that. You can't get totally at peace.
Right. Right.
There's some things vigilant no all the time. There is no rest.
Right.
And when people care about you, they allow you to rest in the grace of their presence.
Mm-hmm. And they also, in the street life anyway, people that you care for and care about you, you take advantage of it.
Well, it's mixed. You know? Yeah. Right. You know? It's not reciprocal.
Pure.
It's not pure. It's not reciprocal.
Right. Well, it might be reciprocal.
It might be reciprocal, but it's still, not for your benefit.
Right. It's not always healthy either.
It can be a pound of flesh from both sides, right. And that still leaves you a pound less shy.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, one of the biggest surprises, I guess, was I never thought in my life that I would be in a group hug singing the theme song to Laverne and Shirley. That was quite a shock. a happy one.
Right.
As
your heart grows lighter, which is what I see in the way that you're here with me now, as your heart grows lighter, what was some of the source of the heaviness that made it so hard for you?
I think that, well, I didn't really didn't grow up right. And it wasn't, I didn't have like a bad upbringing or anything like that. It's just that.
Well, there's a different, I mean, the context of your upbringing is not the same thing as growing up.
Right.
And people have to have relationships of commitment and challenge to
right.
grow up. What do you see as the issue?
Well, I just, I began using drugs at a young age, and I think that, like as a party, not because I had a horrible life or anything.
You weren't
like that.
Using them to escape, you were using them to play.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I just played all the time. And didn't like do any kind of like self-reflection or personal inventory or even like question people's motives or anything. It was just like a cannonball, you know. And I like now I pay a lot more attention, you know, to everything, and feel like I wasted a lot.
Right.
I wasted a lot.
Right. Help me here. I'm going to project a little bit and just correct me, but I think it may be quicker if I project and you correct than other ways. So when you're a kid, you need people to kind of test your mettle and to help introduce you to what being an adult means and to walk through with you your curiosities, your sexuality, your hopes, your fantasies, and kind of serve as that wall against which you can grow. And as we go from that, the death of the child and the birth of the man, it's a hard transition. And if you're, and when you don't, my father died when I was 7, and I had some old men in town who helped me with part of that, and I had people who cared. But if you don't have somebody to walk you through that it makes everything seem like it's a life or death issue. And you get so sensitive to it, or you totally shut it out.
Right.
And if you get sensitive to it, you eventually shut it out because you can't take it all in. And if you shut it all out with drugs, you're not going to experience it in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, that's the picture that comes to mind when you tell me.
Yeah, I had a culmination of all that. I had my father and I have a great relationship now.
Now, yeah.
But it took 40 years for us to have a good relationship. And that's not all on him either.
No, no.
It's on me too.
No, and even when you're a kid, it's partly on you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What changed? What has made that relationship possible now?
We both became willing to accept each other. You know, because we didn't accept each other and who each other were. And now we're both, you know, before, like, he's a Red Sox fan, I'm a Yankees fan.
You got the Yankees sweater on right now.
So that in a nutshell, you know.
Well, and you took it from there and blew it wider apart.
Right, right. And I actually bought him a Red Sox hat. And they won the World Series that year. I bought it for him at the beginning of the season, and he never wore it. And then he came into the work the next day with my son, the Yankee fan, bought me this hat. And, well, you know, I matured more, you know, and somehow we made a connection. Mm-hmm. And I cherish that now, you know.
Yeah. And you don't have a grudge against him?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But I did. You know, and so did he, you know, we get along great, and I try to talk to him as often as I can, and things are awesome now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm happy for it.
Right. So that relationship is another relationship that has been restored.
Yeah.
And how is the practice of being close to others in reality, now that you are living in that space as best you can, how is that different than what you feared it was?
I think that I allowed my expectations of other people to let me down. Like, I expected people to be able to be like me and do what I could do, and when they let me down, I took it real personal.
Right.
You know, yeah. And I don't take things so personal anymore.
Right.
I still take a lot of things personal, but I try not. Like, I used to think everything was a personal attack on me, like somehow they knew I was coming to the stoplight and they changed the light. You know?
Yes.
And I mean, it's a little ridiculous, but along those lines, I took everything personal.
Right. And when you don't have a container to hold your life, you don't just project to the walls of the container, you project to the whole world.
Right. Yeah.
And assume that it's all about you and it's all out to get you. And had there been a tighter container around you of family, friends, or whatever, or had you been open to that younger, then that balance might have come sooner.
Yeah.
But when we don't have it, projection is what we fill the space with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's tough to learn it later.
It is.
When you don't learn it kind of what would have been the first time around. But what you said about equality, you expect other people to be the same as you and to have the same skills and weaknesses and interests as you. And that's living without the container. Because when you have the container, you realize that people have, other than you, have completely different skills and interests. And they're still your equal. They're still no more or less important than you. And they have things that they want to do. And you do too.
Yeah, it's just there's things in my life that for example, I I had to go in the hospital for a week. So I gave a buddy of mine my drug business to run while I was away. And all he had to do was answer the phone. And like when I came back, it was in shambles. And I was like, dude, all you had to do was answer the phone. And he couldn't do it. And I was like, I couldn't understand it. You know what I mean? And
right. Yeah, yeah,
it's like the same thing, you know?
Yep.
Like,
no, I get it. Yeah.
Like I can tie my shoes. Why can't you?
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
It's
not fair.
Right.
And you don't understand how it's different.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Because you never lived in the space where people respected the difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That's tough for me to, yeah. You know, that's one of the things I need to work on. I continue to work on this.
Me too.
Not expecting so much from people.
Right.
You know?
Right. So let's cut to music, and then we'll come to the last section of the show. What should
okay.
we play next?
Let's start creeping into the punk rock, and we'll go old school with the Dead Boys. This is Ain't It Fun. These guys influenced like almost all of my favorite bands as a teenager.
Wow. Here we go. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Tony Seidel. So, Tony, the way we close out the show is with a question about self-care. What do you do to take care of yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically, throughout the day, weekly, monthly, and how do you know you need to do something?
Well, emotionally, I'm still pretty much a mess. I'm working on that.
You and most of the rest of the world.
Yeah.
is working on it.
I don't even know really how to take care of myself emotionally. I
Well, something seems to be working better now than it was before.
Yeah.
It's not where you want it to be.
No, it's not. I get really overcome by things sometimes, overwhelmed. And that's when I start not reacting. I start reacting instead of responding, you know, and...
So you catch yourself reacting.
Yeah.
And that disappoints you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you do when that disappoints you?
Well, sometimes I just bottle up and be like, oh, God, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, or, so you shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
And that's human. That's what we all do when it gets to be too much.
Yeah. And
but you're not medicating.
No. No. You know, thank God I have only had one time since I've been home from prison that I thought about getting high. And then I got to the point where I was going to, like I went through, you know how they say to live it through, you know, like think about it.
To just stay and ride the wave.
Yeah, yeah. And I did that without even realizing I was doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I was sitting there and I was like, yeah, it's going to feel great. And then it dawned on me that I didn't want to feel like that. And that was such a relief. You know, luckily the guy, when he asked me if I wanted to get high, he didn't have the drugs on him. You know, he was like, I'm going to get it. I'll be right back. So when I came to that point where I was like, oh my God, I don't want to feel like that. I ran out of the house so they wouldn't be here when he got back. Intellectually. Yeah,
that is one of the most sweet acts of self-care that anyone has described on the show.
Oh, I was...
You just ran out of the house, so you wouldn't be there, and you wouldn't have to do what you didn't know you could hold off.
Yeah, yeah. And that in itself, because I was really worried that, you know, they teach that you're always going to want it for the rest of your life, and I was really worried about that.
Right.
You know, and so when that happened, it was a great relief. It was like, it was like I had... And freed from bondage or something.
You crossed, you
know?
Yeah. Wow.
And, so like intellectually, I try to write at least 10 minutes every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I try to learn something new as often as possible, you know? I'm always looking for like new music and new art and new authors and stuff, but I try to just find something new every day. I also do a lot of Sudokus and crossword puzzles. I read once that'd keep me from getting dementia. I don't know if it'll work, but I'm pretty demented.
That's another meaning of the word dementia.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also have a documentary that I did with Bruce Levitt and Pete Carroll. We're going to be screening that this Wednesday at 4:30 at Schwartz Performing Arts Center up at Cornell. Yeah, and
what's the topic of the documentary?
Me.
Oh, okay.
And the things that I've done and where I'm headed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm hoping at some point to publish a book. You know, I've got piles, literally piles of writing. And
wrestling it into a form that sings.
Right. Yeah.
Is the challenge.
Yeah. And I'm currently going through all my writing from prison and typing it, so it's on the computer instead of handwritten. And that's what I do to take care of myself intellectually and to hopefully ensure my future. And do the play. This play is everything to me. I just love it so much.
Yeah, so, I mean, and it's not just this play, it's the whole being part of the reentry program from year to year. It is a community for you.
Yeah, that's what I should have said.
No. I mean, I'm only interpreting what you said. You said it was fine. I'm just putting it in other words.
I do love the Civic Ensemble. Yeah, I love it very much.
They are your people.
Yeah, they are.
And we all need our people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love all the people that are in it very much.
Right, right.
They're amazing people, all of them.
So what do you do to take care of yourself physically?
Well, I work out a little bit. I still smoke cigarettes, but...
do you walk a lot?
I walk a lot. Unfortunately, I drive a lot because I deliver pizzas, but like... I do pull-ups and push-ups a few days a week.
Right.
I try to walk around as much as possible when I'm in town. Like, I won't drive to the Burn Dairy from my house or,
right.
you know, stuff like that. And thank God it's starting to get warm out again. And like, I try to do something active, you know. I don't like... walking up a flight of stairs and getting winded, you know.
Right.
So I try to keep in shape as well as I can.
Right.
Plus, I run around with a bunch of kids. You know, my upstairs neighbor has 4 children, and I have 3. And sometimes on the weekends, there's 15 kids hanging out. And
right.
I love that so much because like. The person I was before, nobody's letting their kids around me.
Right.
You know? And people know that their kids are at my house or at my neighbor's house, and then I'm around, and they're not worried in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
And they actually like that I'm around their kids. And that, to me, is so awesome because it says that I've done a lot of changing,
right?
And that I'm a person that, because kids are influential, you know,
right?
And I'm an acceptable person around their kids. That's a big deal to me.
Right, right. And were you early on, your effort at self care, in terms of other than medication or drugging or whatever to kind of numb yourself, your effort at self care. Began when you realized how you compromised your son when you were stopped.
Yes.
And he was carrying the drugs for you.
Yeah.
That many times we don't care for ourselves until we see the impact of our lack of care on others.
Mm.
And that's, I mean, women in domestic violence, and the seeing happen to their kids, what they've tolerated for themselves. We don't oftentimes think about really learning to care for ourselves until we see somebody we've hurt.
Right.
Or disappointed. And that seems to be a starting point. As you have taken responsibility for yourself, what has been easier to learn, what has been harder to learn about your self-care?
That's a tough one. Easy to learn. What is easy to learn about my self-care?
I guess writing 10 minutes a day is kind of easy for you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. writing is. Well, I have to do that. It doesn't even.
It comes out of you.
Yeah. I have to. It's like. I didn't choose to write. Writing chose me. I've been writing since I was 8 years old.
And now you're doing it with a slightly different point of view.
That's really easy for me. What's tough is like recognizing the things that I need to change right off, you know?
Uh-huh. Takes a while.
And figuring out how to go about changing them. You know, that's the tough part for me, I guess. And staying on top of it, you know? I guess it's not tough, but it's like.
Well, I mean, what? Recognizing that we need to do it is a place that's not denial, but we also don't want to be so perfectionistic that we have to get there yesterday,
right?
Because we're both going to damage ourselves and the others we ostensibly care for if we try to be perfectionistic about it. And perfectionism is a lot of what's behind addiction too.
Oh, yeah.
Is failing to live up to that kind of thing or getting caught in that false image or idol of perfection.
Yeah. So, yeah, I...
So you're struggling to find the middle place.
I am. Yeah. Yeah, I am. And I really like where I'm at right now, But I'm not content.
Right.
Because there's places I need to be.
Yeah. But and that to me says you're alive and responsive.
Yeah. And it's great.
Yeah.
It is. It's great. It's better late than never, you know.
Right.
I really am happy with how my life is going.
Tony, it has been absolutely delightful to get to know you.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been great.
And I look forward to streets like this at the Kitchen Theater on May 5th and 6th and at GIAC on May 7th. And people can go to civicensemble.org and find out more about that. Tony, it's been wonderful. What would you like to close the show with?
Well, I think I'm going to go with Rancid. I was going to say Slayer. Slayer is my absolutely favorite band, but...
It just didn't play out in the cards this time.
It's been a folkier day.
Okay,
Let's go with Rancid. This is Jim Carroll in the middle of this, I believe, doing the spoken word.
Was Tony's closing song for the show that we aired, and now we're going to go ahead and play the one song that is his favorite that he wanted us to play.